Messi looked at you and walked right over and gave you the interview.
He was so nice because he looked at me and he say like, oh, he's so nervous. You know, he's what's happening with this guy?
Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Offside with me, Taylor Twellman. And if you're new here, welcome. Where the hell have you been? I'm happy to have you anyways. First of all, thanks for all the nice responses to last week's interview with John Herdman. The consensus from Toronto fans seemed to be progress might not be linear, but people are proud and excited to have John at the helm. And guess what? We've got another coach interview coming at you today with another first-time MLS boss hailing from the United Kingdom, head coach of your Minnesota United, Eric Ramsey. We'll also have Diego Valeri joining me to chat about how it's going as the lead analyst voice for MLS and Apple's Spanish-speaking audience. He and I call a lot of the same games, same airports, same meals, same meetings. He buys the beer, I buy the burgers. So I'm excited to get his perspective.
With all the stuff we have, we are like really inside of the game, right? We are playing the game.
If you missed this weekend's Major League Soccer action, first of all, where the hell were you? Second of all, we've got yet another new pair of teams atop the conferences. Last week, it was the Galaxy and FC Cincinnati. And now, it's the New York Red Bulls leading the East and the Vancouver Whitecaps leading the West. Saturday, the Whitecaps host the LA Galaxy, who slipped to second place after this weekend's loss in El Tráfico.
LAFC, hold on! 2-1 the final in the 22nd El Tráfico.
And with five teams within 2 points of the Galaxy, a second loss in a row would have them dropping further down the table. Meanwhile, in the East, the Red Bulls, they host Chicago Fire, who are coming off a 2-1 win over the Houston Dynamo.
Shaqiri looking for Guti. Brian Gutierrez over the top. Oh, it's in! It's in!
What else happened last weekend? Oh, yeah. Seattle Sounders finally won.
Rui Diaz, yes! The curveball!
Rui Diaz had two in a 5-0 beatdown of Montreal. The Sounders are headed now to Dallas, Texas to try to put more distance between themselves and the bottom of the table. And guess who's back? Back again. Messi's back. Off the bench at halftime, 12 minutes in, scores a goal.
The cross in. Messi takes it in stride. In off the post. You just knew it would happen the minute he set foot on the field.
But Miami still draws the Colorado Rapids. This weekend, they're off to Kansas City. And then two matches Sunday. Atlanta United versus the Philadelphia Union, and St. Louis City will host Austin. To see it all, there's only one place. MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Everyone knows I've got a soft spot for the Columbus Crew. I've said time and time again that Wilfred Nancy coaches one of the league's most entertaining systems. The flowing attack, switches of play, quick movement, it's great to watch. And at its best, it usually flows through the Crew's first-choice striker, Cucho Hernandez.
That switch to the left side, play it ahead. Flag stays down for Rossi, works it across, goes in, got a foot to it, Cucho!
Cucho was MLS Cup MVP last year, and he started this season right where he left off. In the first four games, his goals were worth 7 points for the Crew, linking up well with the attackers and working very hard for his teammates. But then came Game 5 against Charlotte. After a goal that put the game out of reach for Columbus, Cucho is subbed off, and he lets the bench hear about it.
It's a back and forth, yeah, between the coaching staff right now and Cucho. Doesn't look happy.
He's just played a man down for an hour. I get it. You're frustrated. But having a go at the coach when you're leaving the field will always earn you a one-way ticket to the bench. We've actually seen Nancy do this before. Some of you will remember last April when Darlington Nagbe disappeared from the starting lineup against Charlotte for what Nancy implied were disciplinary reasons. But Darlington got on as a sub and the season moved forward. Now, this is where it gets interesting. After the Charlotte blowup, Cucho doesn't even make the bench against Nashville 2 weeks ago or in the 1-1 draw in a crucial CONCACAF Champions Cup quarterfinal home game last Tuesday against Tigres. So when he makes the bench and the lineup against DC United last weekend, all eyes were on Cucho, and it continued to get worse.
And Cucho has seen red.
Red card for Cucho. third time in four matches, Columbus has had a player sent off.
This is the kind of friction that can cost a team, not just in the league, but in the Champions Cup as well. Speaking of which, it's been a disastrous Champions Cup this year. Now, full disclosure, we're taping this on Tuesday before the quarterfinal second leg, so we don't know the results. But as things stand right now, MLS teams were outscored 12-2 in the first legs, and they were all at home. Ouch. While the New England Revolution's mountain may be too much to climb against Club America, Columbus and Inter Miami are still alive. Barely. Hit my Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for my reactions to those games. I'm Taylor Twellman on Twitter and Insta, and I am Taylor Twellman _ on TikTok. Now, I've been looking forward to this, my interview with El Maestro himself, my colleague, Diego Valeri. He's the lead analyst for MLS Season Pass, like me, except a little bit more elegant. And he's on the Spanish language side of the broadcast.
Golo, Sammy. Golazo. Tremendo golazo del griego que controla de pecho y con su pierna inhábil mete una volea que se clava.
Now, when he was on this show for the first episode of the season, he was about to step up as the lead analyst less than 2 years after retiring from professional football. And he gets to do some pretty amazing stuff that the English language broadcast just can't, like interview Lionel Messi in his native language.
Yeah, so he's saying that the first goal opens the game, and obviously the counter was on, and they take it really well, and they did a great game in that before for Suarez. So Lionel, pensás que era lo que necesitaba Luis como para.
So 2 months into his new gig, I wanted to get Diego back onto the show to talk about the transition from playing and the commentating, and then what makes Spanish football coverage so special. But also, he hasn't really spoken in depth since retiring, so I had to get some info about his incredible career with the Portland Timbers. Diego Valeri, buddy, how are you? Are you sick of traveling with me?
Taylor, it's early in the season. I'm still getting fun of it, you know, but I'm going to a point where, yeah, maybe in June, we'll see Leagues Cup, what happened, right? I think it's a lot of travel in Leagues Cup. But it's fun. It's fun. I'll say it's better than studio, you know? Studio is different.
I was just going to ask you, how do you enjoy calling games a little bit more than being in studio?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I really like it. You know, and actually we got really fun games, right? Very entertainment, a lot of goals, good games, you know, most of them, the game of the match day. So I really like it. Yeah, so I'm having fun, you know. It's good. It's not the same as playing the game, but it's close to it.
Yep. Before we get into some analysis of the MLS season now, I think it's important that our Apple listeners understand our history, you and I. I've called so many of your games with Portland. You played over 250 some odd games for the Portland Timbers in the league. So I'm going to ask you some fun questions. I'm going to see what your answers are. And I'm going to start with the easiest one, I think. But you've never really answered this publicly. What was the most difficult stadium in Major League Soccer for you to play in?
Well, I don't think I have only one. I think I have a couple.
Okay, give me two.
Give me two. I mean, I'll be honest with you. The Atlanta Stadium, It was tough. That final, it was tough to play.
Blanco cutting it back. A ball, but save! What a save! Guzan to keep him out!
We were very good environment. And then in the last couple of years, the Austin Stadium.
Yeah.
It was really tough to play, you know, most likely because we went there with a different weather. It was hot and humid, and you know that stadium was packed the first couple of years for Austin. So I really like it. It wasn't easy to play.
No, but Atlanta was just so imposing. I recently had a great conversation with Yorgos Yakomakis, and he said the first time he played in that stadium, he didn't realize how on top of the field the fans are. And he immediately said, thank God they're rooting for me because anyone coming there to play, it's just so imposing to play in Atlanta.
It is. And you remember the first couple of years of the franchise? Oh, people were like crazy there. 80,000 people or so, right? 70,000 people every game. And, you know, that final was insane.
When you become a grandpa, what's the first story you're going to tell your grandkids about Lionel Messi?
On how huge is his quality in terms of the relationship he has with the ball, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, I saw him with the ball, driving the ball, right? So close to his foot that it's insane. To pass the ball, he didn't impact it. Just a touch, a little touch, and so fast. So that's not, and the way he turns the body, the way he dribbles, right? The way he, as I say, he touched the ball to pass it, playing a small-sided with him, it's unbelievable. So I'm going to say that he has a quality that is not from nature. You know, it's over.
Oh, no, it's not from Earth.
Yeah, it's not from Earth. It's not from Earth.
Absolutely. Who is better for you, Maradona or Messi?
Oh, I think they're different. It's a matter of who you like better instead of, you know, who is better.
I agree.
Is better. And I think Maradona was like a dance, you know, he was dancing. He was so plastic, right?
Yeah.
To play. And Messi, it's a machine. You know, it's a machine. He has some of those, you know.
He has some of those qualities where he can glide and he could dance. But Diego Maradona did that during a time when, Diego, you could get absolutely hammered on a tackle. There was no guard. Players were not protected, and he somehow survived that.
Sure. That's why it's difficult to compare, because different
Agreed.
Generation of soccer, right? And in that term, I would say that Messi, he sustained the level in a way.
Unlike anyone else.
It's valuable. It's really valuable, like anyone else. And that part of being the best, you know that.
Yep.
At this level, it's part of being the best. So for me, they're both at the same level. So
yeah, I agree. But it's a great conversation, because now that you're in the media, we can always create controversy by talking something.
I know.
And it's fun to have that conversation. But it's like in America, it's like, you know, comparing Michael Jordan, you know, to LeBron James, that conversation is going to happen for lifetimes, and it becomes fun. What was your favorite goal you scored in Major League Soccer?
I like the first one that I scored against Red Bull, the first one.
Valeri to the Portland Timbers. What a moment. He says hello to Portland.
You'll always remember your first
one,
absolutely.
You always remember your first, but I like to score against Seattle, you know. I like to score against Seattle.
I would have guessed I would have put $1 million on it that you were going to say some goal against Seattle.
Yeah,
let me guess. July 2016, second goal.
A little bit of cross for Valeri. He's able to bring it down with the chest on Jones. Gets inside of Jones. Now in front, it's in off the post. Diego Valeri, sensational goal for 2-0 Portland.
Second goal. I really enjoy. You know when it happened to you when you score a goal, and as you were creating the chance, you were enjoying what happening, and then when you see the ball going into the net, you say, "Oh, it happens! What I really try to do, what I really wanted to do," and it's just ecstasy.
You can tell by the smile on his face. He goes for Adi at that near post and just finds its way up and over Fry. 2-0 Portland.
I really like it. And I was there, like, and Albus Powell came and hugged me, and it was all, even the celebration was nice. So I really enjoyed that one. I really like it, you know.
What I don't remember is, was it in Seattle or was it in Portland?
No, in Portland. I actually got the chance to score two goals. That was the second goal. We won the game. We were actually the reigning champions that year, so the 16, and it was the first game against them. So it was an special game. You know, we were the champions. They came to our home, and we beat them really well.
I can't tell you how many times broadcasting your games, you scoring that goal coming in off the left, coming into your right foot in front of Timber's Army. I mean, how many times did you score that? Just, it was the perfect goal every time.
Yeah, yeah. I got the chance to score a lot of goals. And it was fun to do it in front of the Timber's Army, you know, because the celebration.
I mean, what was that like? That has to be so, because I don't think people fully understand, because everyone like myself, we're the away person, but to be the home guy, to be the man and to score the goal in front of that crowd.
It was amazing.
Diego, that has to be something special.
It's something really special. And for me, it was special even being in the locker room before we went to the warm-up, right? Before we went out. And you started feeling the noise, you know, the drums, and because the locker room is under, right? So, and you have all the people above you, and it was you know, just special.
It's hard to describe.
And the energy, right? So the adrenaline, right? So then you just wanted to go out and score a goal, and they. Have a look, you know, I always have a look of them, try to see, you know, all the smoke, the green smoke all the celebrations. They're really special. It's something that I really miss. You know, I really miss that. A look at them when you score, after you score a goal.
And that adrenaline rush, you feel like you could run on clouds. It doesn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
Diego, how would you describe to our Apple listeners the Spanish-speaking following in the United States and the fan culture around Major League Soccer?
I think it's growing a lot. Mm-hmm. Obviously, having Messi in the league, it's important, right? But you see all the Spanish speakers... culture, it's coming to the U.S. and it's creating an identity to leave our soccer, right? To leave this kind of game, which is different than other leagues. You know, it's fun to watch. They start to understand how even is the league in terms of competition, right? Where Colorado goes to Miami and get a point or whatever, you know that. And they really like that. They really like that. You know, I'm getting feedback from people everywhere in the Spanish speaking culture of MLS, and they love it. They love it. And you know, they know it's different than other leagues, and they like that way. You know, they like that
way. Yeah, they do like it, Diego. It's very interesting you said that, because I think globally people don't fully understand that majority of the football leagues around the world, there's a top four, mm-hmm. maybe a top five, and then everybody else.
The fact of having 20 teams where you can, you know, they compete. And then the last part of the season, they really like it because, you know, it's a fun part, the playoff, right? So who arrives in the playoff and who is the underdog and they can do it. That the fact of having that kind of tournament is really attractive for the Spanish speaking fans.
Because it is different.
It is different.
Yeah, when did you know that you wanted to get into commentary? You and I, let me tell a quick story real quick for our listeners.
Yeah.
Do you remember I asked, because at ESPN we had this bus and it went to 10 games a year, and I asked if Diego Valeri would do the interview in English, and you said, I'm not really sure, and I said, I promise you, you'll be fine. And it was you, Darlington Nagbe, and me. And after that, I remember looking at my bosses at ESPN saying, it takes so much courage to do that in your second language, but then to actually be good at it is another one. Diego, I tried to do German interviews in Germany when I was a young player. That wasn't fine. You're brave enough to do it, but to be good at it, when did you know you wanted to do this?
When Jason called me and said, you gotta be here. You better be here showing in the Spanish group. So I don't know, Taylor. I don't know. I think it's as you say, I have, you know, a good relationship with this, right? Just trying to communicate as simple as I can what I think about the game, what I think about our league, and that helped me a lot. Because I'll be honest with you, I'm doing this even right now, and I'm not feeling well, you know, speaking in English. I still think I need to learn a lot because, you know, it's not easy. You still think in Spanish and you don't have the same vocabulary. You need more words to express, right, in English. As it happens with you, probably in German. So
yes, and but it's not at easy. The elegance by which you do it.
Yeah, no, when Jason called me and say, Diego, you got to be here with us, you know, you know the league, you really, it's about that, Taylor. It's about how much I love this league, you know, the MLS.
Of course.
And how much you respect this space and how much, you know, can be showed to the world and with the good stuff we have here. And it's about that. And then it's just learning every day. No, it's not because I'm saying, oh, yeah, I'm born to do this. No. I just try to learn from you guys. You know, I always look at you and try to learn every day because otherwise it's impossible for me to be here. I'll be honest. I don't feel really well in front of the camera, in front of the microphone.
I'll help you with that. No problem.
And you do.
What would you be doing if you weren't doing this then? Would you be coaching?
Maybe. I like the fact of building a group, yeah, building a style. I like that. So I don't know. Maybe it's in inside the field coaching. I don't know. I'm not sure, but I really like this job. I really like it.
Yeah, you know what the best part about this job is, Diego, is you get to see everything.
Yes.
You get to meet a lot of people.
Yes.
You're not stuck in this one team, in this one culture, in this one city. You really get to meet a lot of people, and then you can figure it out, and or you could do this for a living.
Yeah, what about you? What about you? I wanted to ask you about it last time, and I didn't, So it's been many years doing this, and you do it. Obviously, you are the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 15 years, Diego. But I will tell you this: I have a personality to want to be in the locker room and to be a coach type leader. However, my heart and my interest has always been on building a roster and trying to put things together in. Also having my hand in a few other things. So like academies or like, so, you know, is it a technical director? Is it a sporting director? That kind of thing. That's always intrigued me. But Diego, I would have told you right when I was done playing, I would never have done media. No chance, no way. I don't want to do it. And what this has taught me is to be more open-minded. Don't have this opinion that you're not going to do something, because I've been here for 15 years now, sitting here enjoying this, meeting different people, now speaking to you after calling your games for 8 years, you know?
And let me tell you this, I'm doing it really well.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Was there any, because honestly, Diego, there were so many Argentinians that were so good in commentary, and naturally, Andres Cantor comes to mind, right? And for so many of the Spanish speakers in the United States, he's the voice. The one that introduced goal to everyone in this country.
La quiere por derecha, Altidor. Al área viene. Riversita por arquero. ¿Dónde va? ¡Gol! ¡Gol!
How much of him and just Argentina's appreciation for the game comes through with so many of you guys being in the commentary world?
A lot. And you know, it happens the same in the league. So there's many Argentinian players playing the game and adding value.
Absolutely.
to the U.S. soccer, right? So I think, as you say, Andres Cantor is being key in those terms. And it's an inspiration, a model for all of us. And there's many people now with Apple TV doing a great job, you know, bringing a good team. Creating a good Spanish, a great Spanish crew. I think we have a lot of talent coming into, and you can tell that, you know, when you watch and you listen to the games and the commentaries, like Andres Agusha, it's great. Sammy is great. Eduardo Vizcachar, it's great. Mariano, Trujillo is really good. So I mean, he's not Argentinian, but the same. But they are adding that, you know, passion to the game, but at the same time, the view of a style of game. So it's great. And you know, there's in Argentina that's big. You know, it's big. We have big talent, former players or not, that they do a really good job adding value to the game.
Yeah, I think our Spanish commentary teams and studio talent on Apple TV is second to none. I think it's one of the best, and just the different viewpoints is important. But I don't think our listeners fully understand. I was right there standing next to you. You got Messi on the field live and had to live translate that from Spanish to English.
No, it was crazy.
Hola, bueno, Lionel, gracias por estar y felicitaciones por este gran partido. El partido perfecto ante un gran rival, goles tuyos, goles de Suárez. ¿Qué pensás de lo que fue este encuentro?
Lo que voy a decir, no, un partido redondo porque pudimos hacer un gran partido. Sabíamos que hoy teníamos que salir con intensidad porque Orlando te plantea eso, mucho roce, mucho choque.
One, how cool was that? But two, how difficult is that? I mean, Diego, you got a first taste of like, holy crap, I'm going to speak in Spanish and give it to the world in 100 and some odd countries in English. Buddy, you were fantastic.
Thank you. It was just a reaction because I didn't know about it. You know, we got the meeting before the game, and it was, yeah, maybe we'll see, but I didn't prepare for it. So it was just a reaction, you know, the ball came to me and I just reacted. So it was kind of like that. And I was trying to listen to Dan, our producer, right?
Yep.
And I couldn't because I was nervous and I tried to think, you know, what to ask because you want to be like respectful and you want to be right. And then translating. And I was looking actually at you. You were waiting for Julian, right? Russell.
Yeah. Yes.
And I tried to tell you, hey, Taylor, I need some help, but I couldn't. So, no, it's just, you know, as you say, I got the courage there to do it. I try to be right.
I mean, you were great, but Messi looked at you and walked right over and gave you the interview. It, like, people don't fully understand. He saw Diego Valeri.
He was so nice.
And he said, no problem.
Because he looked at me and he say, like, oh, he's so nervous. You know, he's what's happening with this guy? So, and I was actually really loud on it. And, but no, he was so nice with me. He's been nice with everybody there.
And where did you play with him in your career?
In the national team and against him in Barcelona. They scored 8 goals against Almeria in 2011. It was crazy. You know, we prepare the game during the week and say, hey, you know, you don't have to go like too hard on them in Villa, Messi, Pedro, because they beat you really, really easy. You know, they dribble really easy. So we, you know, you go and you pressure and you stop there. So make them to pass the ball.
Yeah.
First ball of the game, a ball came to him, boom, dribble, cut inside. Shot from distance, amazing, 1-0, they score 8 goals. Eight goals. It was fun to watch.
Of course it was.
They managed the ball. You know, remember that squad, man, amazing. Oh. Man. With Dani Alves, Maxwell, Xavi, Thiago Alcantara played that game. So in the middle with Iniesta, Thiago, Xavi, I mean, crazy.
Unstoppable.
There's no way. And then in the national team, we got a preseason for the Copa America.
Yeah.
And obviously, he was in a really good moment in Barcelona. And that was really nice because we were there like 40 days in the Argentinian facility. And it was every day, you know, watching them play, amazing.
Yeah, those are the memories that are, you know what I mean? Money can't buy those, buddy. Money can't buy those.
No, for sure.
The last question I have for you, and it's going to be the hardest question you have today. When you're in the booth for Portland, Seattle, how difficult is it going to be impartial?
I've been there last year. You know,
they invited me.
They invited me in Seattle. It's difficult.
Has to be the most difficult thing for you to do any game that Portland's involved because of how much that meant to you.
Yeah, but most likely Portland-Seattle. Most likely Portland-Seattle. Because
exactly.
You really know, you know, how much your people here in the city wants to win that game. So, yeah. You have to, like, be calm and sometimes, like, trying to think that you're not you, you know?
The problem is you are you, and you will be doing that.
The problem is you are you, and you know, when... And actually, you know, with all the stuff we have, we are, like, really inside of the game, right?
Oh,
We are playing the game. We're playing the game.
Absolutely.
You know, that changed the question a lot. So it's really difficult to don't think about that you are a Timber, right? But I'm learning, you know, I'm learning, and I need to do it more and more. So what about you? How you feel when you do?
Oh, it's hard. It's hard, Diego. To do the World Cup game when your country's playing in the game and you know 15, 18, 20 million people are watching the game. But you know that U.S., Portugal, Ronaldo, and all of that, there's a bunch of other countries and people watching that game, so it's just difficult. But 2014 MLS Cup, the Revolution played the LA Galaxy.
I remember.
Diego, I wore a tuxedo that day, black and white, because I didn't want anyone to think that if I had any navy on me, they're going to be like, oh, he's rooting for the refs. So I literally showed up. It was black. It was white. I had nothing. I had no colors on. And I was just trying to do anything. Yet, listen, the Galaxy were the better team that day. They deserved to win. But anyone that thinks the human element of your former club trying to win their first MLS Cup is not going to be part of your thinking. It's impossible. You're human.
It's impossible. And actually, I think it's healthy if you do it, right? It's kind of normal. It's normal. So. But anyways, at the same time, try to be as cold as you can to analyze, right?
Absolutely.
To analyze what's happening during the game and translate that to the fans.
And Diego, I'll be the first one to tell you, I've been very critical of St. Louis City, of the New England Revolution, because those teams do matter to me on a personal level. So I think it's important that the viewer understands it's not going to stop me from criticizing them and critiquing them. And that's why I think that becomes the most difficult part. You and I are going to be in Kansas City this weekend. And I've talked a lot on this podcast about this Messi phenomenon. But when Messi's on the road in Major League Soccer, it's so different versus when you and I are doing a Messi game in Miami, isn't it?
It is. But I don't think Kansas City is going to be like treating him as home, right?
I agree.
I think it's going to happen the same as Nashville. Or,
yep.
Right?
Chicago last year.
Chicago.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah, so it's going to be, you know, they're going to try to make them feel like he's playing away. And I like that. You know, I think it's going to be a great game.
And, I do too.
And actually, you know, Kansas just lost 2 points against Portland because they were winning 3-0. So they need to turn over that situation. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Yeah.
I agree. 75,000 at Arrowhead is going to be great. Diego, one of the five or six stories I'm going to tell my grandkids will be about Diego Valeri. And the reason why I tell you that is you were one of the best players I've ever called games with. The way you carried yourself on and off the field, but getting to know you this year has been a real highlight of mine. And I hope you know that. And I know the listeners have heard me talk about you many different times, but this has been a real pleasure and I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor for me, you know, having those meetings, the production meetings, and after the games, how much we talk about the game. We should do a podcast with it, you know?
We should. We should do a podcast post-game.
Post-game.
But you're buying the beer.
Okay, I'm buying the beer and the burger. Because last time you just, you didn't get those little small burgers, you know, the mini burgers.
I love you, buddy. Check out Diego's analysis in Espanol on MLS Season Pass. This weekend, he's on Sporting Kansas City hosting Inter Miami. Last week, I talked with MLS newcomer John Herdman about taking over Toronto FC. And to finish off this episode today, I've got another first-time MLS coach who's in his first head coaching gig of any kind. Eric Ramsey of Minnesota United. And not only that, Eric got to the Twin Cities after the season started when he took over for interim manager Cameron Knowles. And yes, I'll admit it, Minnesota was another team I was selling in our preseason episode. I know the Loons fans weren't too pleased with that, especially what I had to say about the team after their preseason. But yes, I was wrong so far. Minnesota has had just one loss on the season to this point, 2 weeks ago against an undefeated Philadelphia Union. So Eric Ramsey comes to Major League Soccer from a little old team you might have heard of, you know, Manchester United, where he was an assistant coach since 2021. And his journey to coaching is a little different. He never played professionally. Instead, he grew up in the UK, Wales to be exact, knowing the entire time he wanted to manage a team, not just be on the field. We spoke to him last week, so before his team fought to a draw against Real Salt Lake this weekend, we were there fresh off their first loss. What's the one story you're going to tell your grandkids, and even your kids when they're old enough to understand, about your first month in Minnesota?
Well, one that I would like to erase from the memory fairly quickly is my Let's Play Hockey announcement.
Say it with me. Let's play hockey.
So that'll certainly be that'll be buried with me, hopefully. So there's been a little bit of that stuff that I think the UK me would probably have found difficult to believe that I would find myself involved in the first couple of weeks here. And then obviously my first game here was exactly as I would have hoped it to be.
And that's going to do it full time. The official start to the Eric Ramsey era. Ends with a win.
Everyone had talked to me for what felt like eternity in the build-up to it about the importance of making our place here a real fortress and a real difficult place for teams to come because the atmosphere is so unique and the quirks of the stadium here and the fan culture, they are so special and they are genuinely unique, I think. It's really hard to create what they have done here in such a short period of time, and it feel natural and organic and something that's a genuine part of being a Minnesota fan. But I was fortunate enough to have felt that after day one, and I had anticipated that maybe there'd be a really lengthy build up to that first home win, and the pressure would build gradually. But to have had it and to have had a couple of family members around it and that sort of thing, it was a really nice way to get off to the start of my time here. So I'm really pleased. And if I look back on the first month, there've been some difficult periods, but generally it's been almost perfect, I would say.
I want to go back to your childhood a little bit, Eric. Before I even get started, you grew up in Wales. I have no idea how to pronounce your hometown.
Llanfyllin. So it's a culmination of many double L's. So Llanfyllin. It's quite an alien sound, I think, for you guys over here.
I mean, I looked it up. There's a beautiful old church built in 1706. The population today is less than 2,000. As a soccer football fanatic, what was that like growing up in such a small town?
Yeah, you probably have delusions of grandeur as to your ability as a footballer, I would say. So I was a good local footballer, good in the locality, but that sort of doesn't translate to the nation or world as a whole. So, but I would also say as a consequence of the type of place that I grew up, I had some opportunities maybe that I wouldn't have had elsewhere. So the coaching thing, I suppose, stems from me being involved in after school clubs, working with kids. When I myself was sort of 14, 15, being a really important part of the local community in that sense. And that's where I got that bug. I think it's probably slightly misleading to picture our place as completely cut off from the rest of the world because it wasn't. You did have some stuff on the not a sort of stone's throw away. We were on the border with England, so it wasn't that we were so isolated that we had right. No access to opportunity. But I do think being like a really focal part of a community, that's going to breed a certain type of person. So I was fortunate in that sense. I was able to turn my hand to a lot of different things and feel like I was an important part of something from a really early age.
Is that why at such a young age you were intrigued by coaching, by managing? That takes a different mentality for a 13, 14, 15-year-old to say, hang on a minute, I'll play, but I'm actually looking at this being the pathway of my career.
Yeah, so my whole world obviously spun around football when I was younger, and I continued to play right up until I went to university. I went to a university called Loughborough, which is sort of the most prestigious sporting university here, and always up until that point had half an eye on maybe making a bit of a breakthrough as a player. But I do think from the age of, say, 14, 15, I had a sense of another path. I was sort of I would say, personality type, really well suited to coaching. Not necessarily really extrovert, but certainly someone that would, I suppose, think relatively deeply about the sport beyond just seeing it as a way of passing a little bit of time, and tended to be the captain of the school team and the county team and the area team and my club team. So I think there was something maybe deep-rooted personality-wise that pushed me that way. And then I think it also coincided with the fact that coaching at that time was becoming a genuine profession in the way it was seen by associations, that we were probably moving past that stereotype of the ex-player turned manager. And definitely, as you've seen in the last couple of years, it's beyond emerging. It is a really established route for coaches now to have come through a more academic sort of career coach type pathway, which is the one that I could see relatively early. And I was fortunate enough to, I suppose, see the direction of travel early enough that I could turn my attention to the ways in which I was going to pursue and make sure that I was skilled enough to take any opportunity that came my way.
Up to this stage of your career, who's been the biggest influence for you within coaching and managing?
I don't think I can put it down to one person, but I would say, obviously, as I was coming through and turning my attention to being a professional head coach, I'm looking toward the types of head coaches that have had the similar background to mine in youth development and gone through a more academic path, I suppose. Obviously, at the time I was 16, 17, 18, Mourinho was coming through, obviously, and establishing himself as a top coach with a background not dissimilar to mine, and Andre Villas-Boas and Brendan Rodgers and those types of guys, I think, would always be reference points for me. And there are a number of other names, I think, that I could add to that list. And then I've worked with a number of sets of head coaches across each of my clubs that I think will have been influential. I was really fortunate to start my career, which I think is almost, if it starts well, it's what carries you forward. And I was fortunate to go into Swansea City at the time that were just establishing themselves as a Premier League club, sort of moving over the cusp of developing a really elite academy, grabbing what was relatively abstract playing philosophy, but something that Swansea really stood for in terms of dominating the ball, dominating possession, that was developed under Roberto Martinez, taken forward by Brendan Rodgers. But I think at the time I had a really nice chance with a couple of other guys to try and solidify that into a development model that we could really break down into its component parts and work alongside with the young players at Swansea. So I think that was an incredibly important part for my career.
I think what's interesting, Eric, for me is that with all the late news, sporting director, coach, everything in 2024 feels like Minnesota United has been catching up to get ready for the season. Then the season starts, Cameron Knowles and the group, they blow doors off everyone, surprise everyone. You're easily the biggest surprise of 2024 from a lot of us on the outside's perspective.
What a ball. Oh, here comes Longwane! Minnesota United deep into stoppage time. Bongi Longwane, his first goal of 2024.
Do you feel like that's kind of waned a little bit, or do you feel like now that you're in it, you've been on the sideline twice, it doesn't matter anymore, you're rolling your sleeves up?
Yeah, I think we've probably reached that point. And over my two games, I think you've probably then found a nice equilibrium, I would say, because for me, you've had that, what would be described in England as that inevitable new manager bounce where someone comes in and the energy changes. And we've probably been the beneficiaries of two of those, I suppose, between Cam's period, which was brilliant, and obviously gave me the luxury of coming onto a ship that was pretty steady. And then my opening game, I think it almost felt like the stars aligned. We were welcoming one of the biggest sides in the league. It was a home game, evening game, brilliant atmosphere. My first game, I'd had a sort of 4 or 5 days in the build-up to that to work with the players. So I felt like that, yeah, the stars aligned almost perfectly.
The Loons are off and running. And it's the first goal of the Eric Ramsey era. And it's an early 1-0 lead over the reigning Western Conference champions. Here, Longwane is going to get on the end of this one, and that might just do it. And a punctual finish from Bongi Longwane. And it looks like it's going to be 3 points in the debut of their new head coach, Eric Ramsey.
And then to have lost the following game probably levels it out a bit, and inevitably over the course of the season, you're dealing with these ups and downs. It's the nature of the league, particularly. It's almost by design that everything stays fairly equal over the course of the season. So you do need to be able to ride these periods of losses and bad form. And that's actually a conversation that I've had with the players. I think they need to know how I am and our staff is when we lose games. And they also need to know what the expectation is from us as to how they should be when we lose games. And I think to have had one again on the back of a really, really big win against LA means that we can start to talk about the constructive messages that we want to pull from these situations. So I think we're probably on a nice point at the moment.
How good was Wonderwall after that win against LAFC?
Yeah, it was brilliant. Don't say it lightly. I do think it is unique. It's a phenomenal feeling, I think. To have won the game with a bit of style, I think it was something that will never leave me.
How will you define success this year for the Loons?
Yeah, I think we as a club have talked about and I suppose the tone to the conversations I had prior to coming in was getting sensibly toward a point where we can go beyond what's been done before. So I think typically it's a group that's been competitive in the conference and hit the playoffs more often than not. So that as a baseline, and then we want to go further and be competitive and be a club that represents one of those that can challenge for titles. But that is going to be a process here. And I know that word process and the word patience aren't the ones that fans immediately want to hear. But I think the nature of the way this club goes about its business is going to be that we will build slowly and sensibly toward that. And that was part of the appeal to me. I'm not coming into an organization that has expectations beyond its means. You're dealing with sensible people, and I will go about things in a way that I feel will benefit the club in the long term. So I think it's keeping that big picture in mind, but also recognizing that I want to be competitive. The players want to be competitive. No one signs up to play competitive sport for long-term process and patience. Everyone signs up to be successful immediately. So it's sort of grappling with those two standpoints, I suppose. I'm somewhere in the middle.
Eric, good luck, my man. I'm sure I'll see you this summer, but I wish you the best of luck and welcome.
No, pleasure. Really nice to speak to you.
Good luck to Eric Ramsey and the Loons this season. I'm sure I'll see you down the road. I always want to know what you're thinking, my dear listeners. We got an email last week from a San Diego listener named Dean. He told me he's a big fan of the Wave, but supports the Seattle Sounders. And he had planned to keep supporting the Sounders. But my interview with San Diego FC CEO Tom Penn a couple weeks ago has him reconsidering. Yeah, Dean, I get it. It's tough changing teams. Please keep me posted on what you decide. But I want you to be like Dean. Drop me a line. OffsidePodWithTaylor@gmail.com. Or go old school. Leave me a voicemail. 646-571-8496. We would love to play your call on the show. And you can always find me on Twitter and Instagram at Taylor Twellman. And on TikTok at @TaylorTwellman_. See you around. Offside with Taylor Twellman is a Major League Soccer podcast produced by Apple TV and Rain Delay Media. Our executive producers are Peter Moses and John Yales. Isabel Angel is our editor. Michael Janot is our engineer. Jonah Buchanan and Iggy Monda are our producers. Music was composed by Brian Decker. And I am your host, Taylor Twellman. Follow and listen on Apple Podcasts. How many touches of the ball did you have in that game?
We didn't touch the ball.